Today is March 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr. in Washington. Coming up, Dutch investigators probe the cause of a deadly shooting attack.
The Netherlands initially was in complete shock because this is a country that hasn't experienced some of the really more deadly terrorist attacks that we've seen.
Also ahead, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro meets with U.S. President Donald Trump. We hear the latest about efforts to drive ISIS out of its final stronghold in Syria and aid agencies move towards Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe after a damaging storm. It's all on today's International Edition. Fighters for the terror group Islamic State have steadily been losing territory. The group controls in Iraq and Syria. Now, Islamic State, also called ISIS, or IS, is making a last stand for its self-declared caliphate. The latest reports say the group has lost control of a tent city in the northeastern Syrian town of Baghouz. United States-supported fighting forces that are fighting Islamic State describe the gain as significant. The Syrian Democratic Forces announced their gain today on social media. The SDF said it captured what it called 157 experienced fighters, many from outside Syria and Iraq. To help us understand the siege and the changing situation on the ground, we reached out to VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden in Washington. Jeff joins us by phone. Hello, Jeff. How are you doing?
Pleasure to be here.
Jeff, the SDF cautioned in its message that this is not a victory announcement. What has the SDF achieved, and what does their announcement mean at this time?
The Syrian Democratic Forces, the U.S.-backed forces in Syria that have been leading the fight against Islamic State and have surrounded the town of Baghouz and have essentially laid siege to it for several weeks, are being very cautious. Numerous times over the past couple of weeks, SDF officials have come out and said the end for Islamic State in Baghouz is near. We've almost cleared out this last remaining territory. They're down to only a few hundred fighters. And each time it seems that both the SDF and the U.S. and other coalition members were surprised about how many civilians were left, how many fighters were left. And so they're being very cautious. In a map that they shared earlier today, it shows what the amount of area they've cleared from Baghouz and now control and have taken away from Islamic State fighters. And it shows the slip of land right by the Euphrates River where Islamic State fighters are now holding up. But there are also some questions that remain unanswered. One of the reasons that time and time again, both the Syrian Democratic Forces and the U.S. were surprised about how many people were here was because they say there's an extensive network of caves and tunnels that Islamic State has used to hide both civilians who have come out by the thousands even in the past week and also fighters, hundreds of which have surrendered in the past week. And they haven't said whether those tunnels have been cleared or how many more fighters may still be lurking in those tunnels, which they suspect are booby-trapped and could essentially be set up as death traps for any forces that try to go in and clear them out.
So the tunnels remain. Has all of ISIS territory been captured?
Most of Islamic State territory has been captured. As of just a week or so ago, officials with the International Coalition have been talking about how 99% of the territory that Islamic State once held has now been liberated and is now either essentially under the control of the Iraqi government or U.S.-backed forces in Syria. And really, the slip of land, it's a sliver of land. They've described it as maybe a kilometer, a square kilometer. There have been various estimates. But that really doesn't tell the whole story because senior defense officials in the U.S. also say there are tens of thousands of ISIS fighters who are not in Baghouz, who have not been in this last shred of the self-declared caliphate, who remain at large, either as sleeper cells or as part of an emerging insurgency. So even though Islamic State controls, to this point, really very little land, it is still a force to be reckoned with. And some Iraqi officials have even said that while they control parts of Iraq by day. At night, it's the Islamic State fighters and sleeper cells and insurgents who control the territory. So there's still a lot of fighting yet to be done.
So still a situation that we'll want to keep our eyes on. Thank you, Jeff. VOA National Security Correspondent in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump is meeting with Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro at this hour to discuss trade and diplomatic ties at the White House. Trump administration officials say the two countries have had extensive talks on issues including agricultural trade. Announcements about those discussions are expected later today. Among other issues that are being discussed are bringing the U.S. and Brazilian business communities closer together and cooperation on energy and infrastructure development. The U.S. also is seeking Brazil's support on Venezuela. Brazil has joined most Western nations in recognizing leader Juan Guaido, leader of Venezuela. U.S. officials say the Brazilian military can play a part in Venezuela's leadership crisis by using its ties to Venezuela's military to help protect civilians. The U.S. and Brazil have already signed several agreements, including one on joint use of Brazil's Alcantara Space Center and not requiring visas for Americans traveling to Brazil. Bolsonaro, who was elected last year, has been called the Trump of South America. Brazil is South America's largest country and biggest economy. Officials in the Netherlands are trying to find out why a gunman killed three people in the city of Utrecht yesterday. Police arrested a 37-year-old man who was born in Turkey hours after the attack on Monday. The police say there does not appear to be a link between the victims and the attacker. Two other people have been detained in connection with the shooting. The Dutch Prime Minister said Monday that a terror attack could not be excluded. We spoke with correspondent Catherine Field about developments related to the shooting, which is being closely watched in Europe. Catherine, what are the latest developments in the case? Is it looking more like a terrorist attack?
Mario, we're now more than 24 hours on since that shooting, that mid-morning shooting on a tram in Utrecht. But Dutch prosecutors have said in a statement that they are really still none the wiser as to the reasons for this shooting. Initial reports on Monday said that this was a domestic dispute, a dispute between the shooter and a member of his family. Dutch prosecutors say that they have been unable to find any link between the man and any of the three people who died in that shooting, and indeed any of the others who were injured in the shooting. They are saying, though, that prosecutors will continue to seriously consider a terrorist motive. They say that's because they found evidence in a letter in the suspect's getaway car. They gave no more details than that. The only other additional information we have is that the ages of the three who died, there was a 19-year-old girl, a 28 and a 49-year-old man. Other than that, we're still unsure of the motive and unsure as to whether or not in the coming hours we will find any more information.
Reports are saying that the suspect had a long criminal record. Is that bearing out?
Indeed. The Dutch prosecutors have said that he had a criminal record which involved cocaine use, drug dealing. He was also in court a couple of weeks ago on rape charges. So he has been well known to prosecutors in the Netherlands. That having been said, we're still going back to the statement that came out just a short while ago relating to this letter that was found in his getaway car. The prosecutors have given us no more evidence on that, just saying that there was a letter in that car. But certainly we've had other indications about this man's mental state. the woman who was the victim of that rape said that she thought that he was not a terrorist, but more of a psychopath. And she had said that she had really feared he was going to come back and attack her. And really, that was what she was initially in her mind when she heard that he could be the suspect in this case.
Does this shooting, again, heighten tensions in Europe, which has suffered very significant terror attacks in recent years? What could be the response in the Netherlands?
The Netherlands initially was in complete shock, because this is a country that hasn't experienced some of the really more deadly terrorist attacks that we've seen, for example, here in France or in Belgium, where people have been shot. It's always been regarded that the Netherlands has got very low gun ownership rates, access to weapons was very limited, it has got a low violent crime rate. So for this to happen in the Netherlands was a real shock. But then again, when it happened, Mario, we saw exactly the same response as we've seen in the rest of Europe. Schools and mosques suddenly on lockdown, security increased in transport hubs and at airports and at the borders. So it was a real shock for the people of the Netherlands to see once again their borders being closed, seeing paramilitary on the street, and just having these sorts of what is very foreign to them, these sorts of scenes in front of schools, mosques and railway stations. Again, is a real reminder that the threat just has not gone away.
Correspondent Catherine Field in Paris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Among today's top stories, Pope Francis has refused to accept the resignation of French Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, who was convicted of failing to report sexual abuse. North Korea says there is no reason to maintain sanctions against it. And Algeria's government says President Abdelaziz Bouteflika promises to hand over power to whomever is elected to succeed him. Expanded coverage on these stories and more is at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Italy is expected to join China's Belt and Road Initiative when Chinese President Xi Jinping arrives in Rome on Thursday. The United States has been critical of the trillion-dollar international infrastructure plan. The U.S. has warned about the risks of debt-trap diplomacy, in which nations risk financial hardship from heavy borrowing for infrastructure. Many European countries are concerned that the plan could add to strained relations among European Union members who disagree about budgetary issues. Experts say Italy is expected to sign a non-binding document with China on Thursday. It would call for construction projects financed by the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, based in Beijing. Italy hopes to reduce its trade deficit with China and limit the costs of involving Chinese investment in road, port, and power generation projects. The agreement also would increase China's use of the port of Trieste. Belt and Road projects have faced financial problems in countries like Sri Lanka, Pakistan, the Maldives, and EU member Greece. VOA's International Edition continues. Uganda and the United Nations World Food Program are investigating whether a food supplement used to fight malnutrition is responsible for hundreds of cases of suspected food poisoning. Three Ugandans have died after eating super cereal, a fortified porridge imported from Turkey. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Uganda's Ministry of Health said Tuesday that at least 262 people in the northern Karamoja region have shown mental confusion, vomiting, headaches, high fever, and abdominal pain since March 12th after eating super cereal. The food supplement manufactured in Turkey was distributed by the World Food Programme to prevent malnutrition and stunted growth among children. While most of the patients were discharged from hospitals after treatment, Health Minister Ruth Acheng says three deaths since Saturday set off alarm bells.
Samples of super serious tox and water were taken from the affected areas, including blood, vomitus and urine from patients, and are currently being analysed at the Directorate of Government Analytical Laboratory and the Central Public Health Laboratory.
Investigators from the Ministry of Health and the WFP are mapping out where the illnesses occurred, looking for connections. While super serious cannot yet be blamed, they want to establish associated factors and possible causes of why so many Ugandans are getting sick. The Health Ministry has sent samples to Mombasa and Johannesburg for laboratory testing. Preliminary results are expected in 7 days. Meanwhile, WFP Country Director Elkidir Dalum assured Ugandans that Super Cereal undergoes all required quality controls before distribution.
WFP has zero tolerance for poor quality or low quality of food. We have a rigorous system from production to consumers. When we tender, we have to tender and we have to do complete due diligence about the suppliers.
The WFP was distributing Super Cereal to 252 locations in Karamoja, including sites across 13 districts that host refugees. As Ugandans wait for the test results, the WFP says it is difficult to say what could have caused possible contamination. WFP senior regional spokesperson Peter Smadden says Super Cereal has only oil and sugar added before distribution.
So it's difficult to see where the contamination could have got in. That's why we're so perplexed, and that's why we're really hoping that the laboratory tests will come out and say where it came in the supply chain and what exactly it is.
The WFP and the Ugandan government ordered the immediate suspension of Super Cereal distribution on Friday as a precaution after illnesses were first reported. Super Cereal stocks at all health centres and communities are also being seized until the cause of the food poisoning can be determined. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
In New Zealand, relatives of those slain by a gunman at two mosques in the city of Christchurch last Friday are waiting for officials to release their bodies so they can bury their loved ones. Prime Minister Jacinta Ardern said the bodies of all 50 victims will be returned to their families by tomorrow for burial as soon as possible in accordance with Muslim tradition. VOA's Steve Miller reports life in Christchurch is slowly returning to normal.
Tuesday is coming to a close here in Christchurch, New Zealand. It's 4 days after the deadly attack claimed the lives of 50 individuals worshiping at two of the city's mosques. Here in Hagley Park, located just across the street from the Al Noor Mosque, where the majority of those slain were killed during Friday prayers, a steady stream of monuments and tributes and memorials continue to be erected along bridges and trees. It's a sign that the community still isn't over the tragic events of last Friday, but are struggling to deal with what comes next. Sarah Stewart Black is the director of New Zealand's Civil Defense and Emergency Management Agency. She was in town today. She spoke with civic leaders and members of the Muslim community, reiterating the government's overwhelming support to try and heal the wounds that were inflicted last week. She made it abundantly clear that as the needs of the family continue to evolve, so will the government's response. Simply saying that whatever is needed to be done, the government will do so. In addition, Krista Casey, she's from the Ministry of Education. She let reporters know that throughout the nation, traumatic response teams are visiting some 20 priority schools. These are schools that have some direct connection to the events that took place last week. The help that is being provided at these schools will last longer than just this week, she says. It will last for as long as it's needed. Steve Miller, VOA News, Christchurch, New Zealand.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The United Nations and international aid agencies are rushing food, medicine, and emergency supplies to areas devastated by Tropical Cyclone Idai. The powerful storm brought deadly flooding and winds to parts of Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. Aid agencies say the storm is the most damaging to hit southeastern Africa in nearly 10 years. There are no accurate numbers of those killed or injured yet, but some in Mozambique say the number could reach 1,000. A team from the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent reached the Mozambican city of Beira Monday. A spokesman said at least 400,000 people in the area have been displaced. The coastal nation of Mozambique appears to have been the hardest hit by Cyclone Idai. The nation's president estimates that as many as 1,000 people have died, many of them in the port city of Beira. Neighboring South Africa has sent soldiers to help with search and rescue efforts and is appealing to local companies to donate goods and services. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Mozambique braced itself Tuesday for a mounting death toll and a host of humanitarian needs in the wake of Cyclone Idai, which hit the coastal city of Beira on Friday, before moving through Mozambique and on to Malawi and Zimbabwe. The initial official death toll stood at 84, but Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi announced late Monday, after flying over the affected areas, that he estimated the number could be as high as 1,000. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies said in a statement Monday that the damage to Beira was massive and horrifying, and estimated that 90% of the city, which is home to more than 500,000 people, was destroyed. On Tuesday, Mozambique-based UNICEF spokesman Daniel Tema said the agency is still seeking information on the impact of the storm. He spoke to VOA via Skype from Maputo, the capital.
At the moment, still don't have the full picture of the situation, but we agree with the assessment of the government that the disaster is of a dimension which is much, much bigger than we thought in the beginning. This is due to the fact that information was coming in very slowly because the city of Beira had been cut off all communication lines and still is. And it's also cut off physically because the roads to Beira are destroyed.
Nivuwa Mabaya, spokesman for the South African Department of International Relations and Cooperation, told VOA that members of the South African National Defense Force landed in Mozambique on Saturday to assist that nation's military in search and rescue efforts. South Africa will try to do more, he said.
We have also called on South African companies to donate for humanitarian assistance. And following this morning assessment, we'll make a further announcement of how we will assist going forward.
Tima said once the rescue is done, humanitarian agencies will still have serious work to do. To that end, UNICEF has appealed to donors for $20.3 million to support its response in all three affected countries. On Tuesday, the European Union announced it would release an initial emergency aid package of 3.5 million euro, nearly $4 million, to assist all three countries. Mozambique will receive much of that money. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You have been listening to International Edition. Follow us on Twitter, VOA IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and engineer, Chong Xiaogong. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Be sure to enjoy your day.